Welcome to another Journey to the Blue Sky. My name is Aaron.
My name is Patricia.
And we are doing quite a special episode. So for those of you who do not know, and if you've been living under a pretty big rock, Nimona was recently released on Netflix. And it's been out for a couple of weeks now. And, you know, we're in the situation where we're asking ourselves, like, we knew from the get-go that this was going to be on Journey to the Blue Sky, because obviously the poll came out whether we're going to do casual chats on it or whether we're going to do a Journey to the Blue Sky on it. So you guys selected that this should be something we do to Journey to the Blue Sky. But here's the thing about this. We were going to originally go through all the other Blue Sky movies to give ourselves, like, you know, a bit more context of, like, where we got up to in regards to where Nimona is now on Netflix after the unfortunate demise of Blue Sky Studios. However, Saberspark has been talking about it. Morgan Terry has been talking about it. Elijah has been talking about it. The Third Bill has been talking about it. And every time everyone within our social media circles starts doing reactions or reviews or, like, just starts to basically talking about it, inevitably the attention turns on us about, well, what do you think of Nimona? And what do you think of Nimona? Why aren't you talking about Nimona? We're still waiting for that Nimona review. When's it coming? Hello? Are you doing it? Please? And that's basically where it's got up to. So here you go, everybody. We are finally doing the Nimona review right here, right now.
Yeah, so I just can't believe that we're at this point where we can finally talk about this movie. The fact that this movie was canceled when Blue Sky Studios shut down. The reason on why Disney didn't want to do this film in the first place. The fact that fans were just so devastated that a graphic novel written by N.D. Stevenson that they wanted to see adapted into the big screen wasn't going to happen. And the fact that everybody who screamed and cried out to everybody saying, man, why did we never get the opportunity to see this? And then we have to thank Annapurna Pictures, who was able to save this project, and now we can finally see it as a Netflix exclusive.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm going into this without seeing the graphic novel, so I don't know, like what the graphic novel, like how much it could differs from that. But again, like all the rules that we have with this movie, you shouldn't have to go to the original source material in order basically to enjoy this feature film. So yeah. So basically, Nimona is a movie that originally was with Blue Sky Studios. Again, like you said before, it is now with Annapurna Pictures. Yeah, you have to forgive me, everybody. There's quite a few pronunciations which I'm going to really not do very well here. So this is a 2023 American computer animated science fantasy comedy or adventure film directed by Nick Bruno and Troy Quayne, from a screenplay by Robert L. Bard and Lloyd Taylor. It is the 2015 graphic novel of the same name by N.D. Stevenson, set in a sci-fi fantasy world influenced by the Middle Ages. The film features the voice of Kira Grace Modrez as the titular character and Riz Ahmed as her partner and former knight, with Eugene Lee Yang and Francis Conroy doing supporting roles. In a medieval futuristic kingdom, the citizens are presented by the Institute for Elite Knights, established by the legendary Helwyn Glorif, who 1,000 years ago vanquished a quote-unquote great black monster that enclosed the kingdom with a high wall for its protection. Ballister Bulbhart, along with his confidant and lover at Ambrius Goldenloin, a descendant of Glorif, are both about to be knighted. Ballister is slated to become the first commoner to receive the knighthood, as Queen Valerin is trying to change tradition so that anyone can be a hero. During the ceremony, Valerin is murdered by a mysterious laser shot from Ballister's sword. Ambrosius tries to stop this by cutting off Ballister's right arm. Ballister is framed for the crime and is hunted by the Institute and its director. So, I mean, here's the thing about this. From the very beginning of this movie, you're already given like a really great introduction. effectively, where, like, you know, in the first 5 minutes of the movie, like, you know, you're really, like, on edge about, like, you know, what exactly could potentially happen.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great setup.
Absolutely. I mean, it was able to open it up as a classic fairy tale where you have the story of this amazing queen who was able to protect the kingdom from this black monster. And then eventually we go over to 1,000 years later where you have this wonderful mixture between medieval fantasy and the futuristic post-punk world. And I was thinking to myself, wow, they were able to take a concept like this and do it great. Like, this is something that I would have wished Onward would have done, in which, like, you know, this is a medieval, you know, town and it's basically like taking place in our world, but it just feels like generic, you know, suburban life with just a little sprinkle of magic here and there with just medieval creatures. But this one was able to take it to a whole new level. We have knights, swords, and at the same time, we have televisions, modern technology. We just have all of that, and it doesn't feel out of place. It doesn't feel like it shouldn't belong. It all blends in perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I didn't think about is, like, comparing it to Onward, because, I mean, Onward obviously is, you know, a movie where, like, it is taking place in a fantasy world, but it's, like, you know, surrounded by modern convenience, whereas I think Nimona doesn't really do that. Like, I think it is aware that, like, there is modern things that are currently going around it, but it's not the premise of the movie, effectively, which I think is probably, you know, what differentiates it, I think, from Onward.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, they kind of did, like, the whole medieval town mixed with modern times, and they did it differently, but I think that Nimona did it a lot smarter.
Yeah, if anything, I compare it more to Big Hero 6, where, like, you know, you've got, like, you know, Americana and, like, you know, Japanese, like, you know, also futurism kind of, like, all mixed up into one.
I can kind of see that.
Yeah, exactly. So, we're introduced to Ballas the Boldheart, and, I mean, you look at him, and he's like, yeah, you would think he was going to be a villain at some point, really.
Yeah, because he's, like, wearing all black, his sword is black, he has, like, the scar on his face, and the mustache, and soul patch, and you're thinking, like, yeah, this looks like a guy that you shouldn't trust.
Mm-hmm, exactly, and, where was I going to go with that? So, I mean, like, yeah, so like, it is like, you know, the unlikely hero, effectively, like, in this, which I think is really good in starting off with that. But, I mean, obviously, like, you know, he's got a very complex, you know, which, you know, Nimona considers, like, you know, the nemesis of this, and that's with Ambrosius Goldenloin in that. And, like, you know, he's the descendant of Glorif. Like, you know, he's the guy who definitely should be a knight and not Ballister.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, you know, the whole framing that they really trying to give this, which I think, you know, is really good.
Yeah, you know, like you have, like, the commoner who's going to be the knight amongst all of the other knights who are born to do this and who look absolutely perfect with their white armor and their slicked back hair and their perfect features. And then you have this commoner who's rugged and who's wearing all gray and black and who has that, you know, doesn't have the same bravado as everybody else. And, you know, he had to work his way up to becoming a knight. He had to basically start from the bottom, go all the way to the top with hard work, determination, and taking his job very, very seriously. And we see, you know, that portion of the story where we were able to get that quick little montage of him, you know, where he was at and where he is, and nobody trusts him. You know, the only people who do trust him are the queen, the director, and then, of course, you know, his quote-unquote companion slash lover, Ambrosius. So, yeah, I mean, we do get this, you know, we do essentially get the idea of Ballister right away.
I mean, we also introduced to us Thaddeus Shoreblade, basically, who is basically just like, you know, he's basically a dunce, effectively.
Yeah,
like, you know, he's like a generic high school bully, effectively, you know, in this. And, you know, like, I mean, that's also an interesting commentary on that as well. Like, you look at him and you think, yeah, he's come from, like, you know, from privilege, effectively. Like, you know, he clearly is airheaded and knows no better and has not been really got much experience in life. And somehow he's managed to get up to this point.
Like, yeah, you know, and the only reason why is because you know, he's from the palace and he's part of royalty and he thinks that he is just as great as everybody else. And he doesn't think anything of Ballister because he's, you know, he's not, you know, from the palace and he's not of royal lineage. But yeah, Thaddeus is just this generic dunce who thinks that he's above and beyond everything. But, you know, in reality, he's not.
So we get to the point where, like, they're going to have, like, the big ceremony to, like, you know, knight these guys. And, you know, like, you do feel, like, the anticipation. Like, you know, you're in this massive stadium. Everybody's cheering and everything. You wonder if, like, you know, if there is going to be, you know, how this is all going to, you know, turn out. And, you know, your battles are stepping up. And you just hear, like, this just this quiet. And then he gets knighted. And then, like, you're kind of, like, wondering, you know, what's going to be the reaction? And then everyone gets to their feet and starts cheering because then they realize that, you know, anybody can be, you know, a knight, which is a really good setup in all
of
that.
I do agree.
Yeah, exactly. But then, obviously, you know, tragedy strikes and, like, you know, his handle of his sword somehow, like, you know, turns into a gun and then just blasts the queen away.
Yeah, that was actually pretty shocking.
Yeah, it was. And but then so much happens in all of this because you got Ambrosius who, like, can't believe what he's seen. And, like, he just out of instinct, he just acts to try and protect the queen and cuts off his own lover's arm.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm sure that must have been not easy for him, considering that, you know, the queen is dead. And then he, in order for him to kind of, like, save the queen, even though it was already too late, he had to cut off the arm of somebody that he loved. And unfortunately, now Ballister is seen as a murderer and it's, you know, more proof that, hey, commoners shouldn't be knights. And, you know, he was never to be trusted, and that now he's just going to be forever labeled as a monster. And so he had to run in hiding just so that he can be able to prevent himself from being seen because he just murdered the queen.
Yeah. And so this makes the news, obviously. And the one person who picks up on that news is Nimona herself. And she seeks him out. And so he's hiding out, like, you know, probably looks outside the city from the looks of it. And she then seeks him out and then says, oh, well, because I'm seen as a villain as well, I should become your sidekick. And though you've got Ballister who's protesting, saying, like, look, I'm innocent. I didn't do all of this, even though Nimona, obviously, is just kind of, like, you know, she's sort of, like, naive and caught up in her own narrative. And, like, which is kind of shocking to really think about, really, when you finally find out about, like, a backstory later on in the movie.
Yeah, like, I have to say that Nimona is fantastic. Like, she
is, isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, you know, something like Nimona, who's just constantly just all in your face and very cocky and overconfident and trying to be able to convince Ballister to be her sidekick. You would think that a character like this would just be really, really annoying. But no, she just plays it off so well that you're actually intrigued with her. Like, you want to follow alongside with her. You want Ballister to say, yes, please be alongside me. You are amazing. This could have been done so wrong, but they were able to play it off so right with just these little touches here and there where, you know, her confidence is, you know, taken to its advantage and she's able to shapeshift and transform into a whole bunch of other creatures. And she's not fully human. She is a shapeshifter and she has this really tragic backstory that you find out a little bit later on. But there's a lot of mystery to her that you want to know more information about. And then she kind of, like, leads people in a different direction about, like, oh, well, we're going to learn more about her. And then it's like, nah, I don't really care about that kind of small stuff. You know, ask me bigger questions. Don't ask me about the small stuff. And it's like, that's interesting. That's fascinating. I want to learn more. I want to see more of you.
Yeah. And I got to be honest, this Nimona, if she's done correctly, like, in the future, I think she'd become the next Shrek.
I completely agree 100%. When I was watching this movie, I was thinking of Shrek. I was thinking of a movie that was able to break away the conventions of what we've seen already with animated films. The fact that it was able to take, you know, the typical fairy tale and just turn it on its head the way that Shrek did over 20 years ago, where it was, you know, it was during the Renaissance period of Disney and everybody and anyone was trying to rip it off by, you know, having this fairy tale taking place long, long ago and having music and you know, having colorful characters. And then Shrek basically came along and said, no, we're going to basically make fun of Disney of everything that it's been doing. And it did that by featuring a character that would have ordinarily become the villain. And then we would have a princess who is not your damsel in distress. She actually kicks ass. And then we have, you know, the essentially the bad guy who you think would be the hero, but instead he isn't. And he's just this pompous guy who wants to take over everything, just like how Disney is, in which like they want to basically take all the fairy tales and, you know, push it away because they want everything to be absolutely perfect. And so, yeah, I mean, the things that they were able to make fun of here in Nimona was that, okay, you think that this person who would ordinarily be a villain is our hero, and the person who you think would be the hero is the villain. And they're basically doing a whole bunch of, you know, commentary on things such as being rejected because you're different, and basically saying if you're a monster, you're always going to be a monster, just like Shrek. Ladies and gentlemen, Nimona is our generation Shrek.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't say that as an insult either. I say that as a very positive thing because, you know, she is a character who compounds your expectations. Like, she, you know, you probably look at her and you think, I sort of kind of know what to expect, but then no. Like, I think, if anything, like, you know, I'm trying to find, like, other characters I can really compare her to, but she's really quite unique, which is very refreshing when you really think about it because, you know, like, the only person I can really compare it to is someone who, like, you know, is very different entirely, but also compounded expectations. Effectively. And so, you know, I think Nimona is very refreshing.
I do
have
agree.
To say. Yeah.
And especially since we've come through a year of just movies that didn't meet up with our expectations. We just saw Elemental and that didn't really, you know, I mean, it was all right, but it wasn't like fantastic like it should have been. And as of right now, we haven't seen Ruby Gilman Teenage Kraken. But then again, that's currently DreamWorks.
I think a lot of other people haven't seen Ruby Gilman Teenage Kraken, not just us. So I think,
yeah, I think we're just talking to ourselves.
I think we talk about Teenage Kraken and Dream Machine, but I digress.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, there's been a lot of animated movies that came out this year that a lot of people were just like, not very interested in. This is the only one that I've seen so far where people are like saying, you need to see this movie. Well, everybody else was like saying, Elemental, I kind of feel like I've already know what the movie's about. Same thing with Ruby Gilman Teenage Kraken, where they were like saying, yeah, I kind of already know what they're trying to go with this trailer. I don't need to see any more of it. So yeah, I think that this is the only one that I've seen in which like people are genuinely excited to be watching this movie and talking about it.
Did you know what I love most about Nimona is that, you know, you and I know Morgan Terry. And, yes. You know, like, if Morgan Terry and Nimona met in real life, couldn't you get, I can guarantee you, Nimona would immediately become Morgan Terry's best friend. I can just see it. Like, you know, like, they talk about how crazy, you know, how much damage they want to do to the world and everything like that. I could just, you know, and just, you know, them just geeking out over stuff and like, just, you know, this is the thing, Nimona feels real. Doesn't she?
Yes.
Like, you know, like she just wants, you know, she has she wants to be crazy and she wants to, like, you know, make a mess of things, but not just out of, like, you know, just being, you know, she's not the Joker from Batman or anything like that. Like, you know, she has, you know, meaningful intentions over some of the stuff that she wants to do. For example, like, you know, when she finally finds out that Ballister has been innocent this entire time and, you know, she actually just genuinely, like, wants to help him out about what's going on. And so that's the reason they come up with a scheme of, like, you know, trying to get the director to confess to what basically has happened and then obviously put that all over the internet and just watch all the chaos ensue from everything that's going on.
Yeah, didn't you send a tweet over to Morgan saying about that that rough animatic?
Oh, pre-production animatic. Yeah, I said that's my idea of Morgan Terry getting a soda from the fridge.
And then she's like, yes, it is.
And she agreed with me. And so, yes. Yeah, but seriously, Nimona, it feels so real in a way. Like, you know, I mean, I know she's like a shape-shifting, like, you know, anarchist. I get that, all that. Mind you, I guess some people could probably be that too, but, you know, who knows in this day and age. But, yeah, I mean, I can see Nimona being so relatable to, you know, a lot of people. Like, they're just trying to find their place in the world, effectively.
Yeah, and it can be applied to anything. if you're autistic or if you have a physical or noticeable disorder, or if you're part of the LGBTQ community or anything like that. It can apply to any situation.
Yeah. And the thing is, Ramona's trying to find a place in the world. She's found Ballister. She's discovered Ballister, who she thinks, oh, wow, there's another villain here, like in a world that's kind of like full of. In a way, I don't know. Like, you know, we were talking about, like, you know, before about Shrek and about Duloc. I mean, could you compare this city to Duloc?
Absolutely. Because, yeah. I mean, you have a place that is locked away from everything. Only the most prestigious people are allowed in here. Everything has to be perfect. There can be no blemishes. Anything that is not considered perfect, we're just going to cast aside. And it's surrounded by this large wall where nobody has ever left outside of their city. And everybody thinks that anything that is considered to be not within what they're accustomed to is considered ostracized. Like when they first saw Nimona and they saw her shapeshift, they immediately said monster because they've never seen anything like this. They're not accustomed to this. Anything that is not within what they consider to be, perfect is bad. You should stay away from it. You should get rid of it. You should destroy it. So yes, I would compare it to Duloc in a sense.
Mm-hmm. So, also we got Ballister himself, by the way, like, you know, he replaces his cut off arm with his robotic arm. So, like, he does have, like, a sense of, like, that's interesting. Like, you know, I thought maybe that would have been played on a bit more in Ballister's character. Like, he knows technology so well that, like, you know, he can rebuild his arm with, like, you know, robot parts effectively.
Yeah, I would have thought that maybe, you know, he would have, like, used the arm for, like, multiple things, but no, he just uses it as a replacement for the arm that it was cut off.
Yeah, like, I thought maybe, like, it would be, like, maybe it would be, like, Generator X, maybe, like, you know, where it, like, turns into, like, different stuff, but...
instead of, you know, because he didn't have his sword anymore, maybe he can, like, shape it into a different sword, or maybe he could have used that to break away from prison, or maybe he could have used it for, like, tools to survive, but no, I mean, he just uses it as, well, an arm.
Maybe we got that. So, I mean, we also got the director, which basically is our villain in this whole thing, which it doesn't even become apparent until, like, later on in the movie.
And yeah, because very similar to, like, the fairy godmother in Shrek 2, in which, like, she's supposed to be the one that everybody loves because, you know, she is the most powerful being in the entire kingdom and she is beloved and, you know, she's the one who's supposed to make you feel good and who's supposed to grant you wishes. And the director is basically the one pulling the strings of everything. She's the one who's saying, you know, I'm the one who's going to keep your city safe. I'm the one who's going to protect you. They're the ones who are the bad guys, not me. So yeah, she's the one who basically fools everybody, very similar to how the fairy godmother fooled everybody in Far, Far Away. And yeah. I think that's brilliant.
The thing that makes the director more brilliant is that, I mean, she doesn't necessarily, she says, like, oh, I'm going to protect you and I'm going to make sure I'm going to keep the city safe. But, you know, like, you can only imagine, like, you know, say, for example, like Commissioner Gordon from, you know, Batman, like, you know, he would say exactly the same thing, wouldn't he? Something, you know, massive like that happened. Like, you know, oh, hey, you know, the Queen's been blown away. Don't worry. I'm going to make sure I keep the city safe. Yeah. Anything like that, like, you know, reassure everybody and stuff. So, like, you know, I kind of got like a Commissioner Gordon kind of like feel over, like, you know, the director, like, that's all she is. Like, you know, she doesn't really know, like, what's going on until, like, you know, there's no Batman to, like, you know, come over onto the rooftop and tell her, oh, this is what's really going on, is there? So, like, you know, I just assume that director basically just knew as much as everybody else did.
Yeah, but in reality, and she keeps this very subtly, she's trying to control everybody. I mean, she's even like manipulating things on the news and trying to put a bunch of lies out there so that she can be able to fool people thinking that Ballister and Nimona are the bad guys. And she's the good guy. She's the one who's going to protect everybody from these monsters.
Oh boy, is that interesting commentary in this day and age, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, very interesting commentary. Like, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I know, like, Disney were talking about before, like, you know, they were kind of pushed back on the LGBTQ themes. And that's the reason why they didn't really, you know, were too keen on Nimona, from what I understand.
Yes, especially since, if you remember that 2021, when we first heard about the movie's cancellation, that was around the time in which they were doing the whole don't say gay bill thing.
Yeah, Disney say gay and everything like that. Yeah, like... But on top of that, like, there's other themes in here. It is very, very, very heavily commentating on, you know, the society that we have today. Like, you know, our reliance on technology and our reliance on politicians to say that, you know, everything's going to be okay and everything like that when things aren't okay and things are, you know, things are very, very wrong. and stuff like that. Like, you know, there is a lot of social, a lot of political, and a lot of like other commentary that goes on in Nimona. That's the reason why it resonates with a lot of people, because it is very anti what's going on right now, you know, pretty much. And they're just looking for someone as like, you know, like Nimona, who like, you know, is going to basically going to take a sledgehammer and throw it into the screen. You know, like that famous, you know, scene that we all remember from like from Apple before basically they became the very thing that they hated. But I digress. But yeah, that's the reason why this movie resonates with a lot of people. Like, it's just it's got this whole rebellious feel towards it and everything, you know. And I think Nimona got the tone right.
I agree.
Effectively, what's going on right now. So
yeah, and the fact that Disney wanted to cancel this movie for, I mean, obviously because of the whole LGBTQ thing, but also there were other things that were featured in the movie that didn't want to show to kids. And
isn't this a movie DreamWorks would do? Don't you think back in the day? I guarantee Nimona will be a movie. Well, it should be a DreamWorks movie.
I agree. I'm really surprised that Blue Sky Studios was tackling this. And then eventually when they were bought off by Disney, that they were able to look at this movie and say, I don't know. I mean, can we remove a lot of this stuff? Because, I mean, we already know the history of Disney removing LGBTQ characters or limiting them to like a few seconds so that they can be able to remove these characters when they distribute it over to other countries. And or, hey, we're going to ban your movie because it features said character who is LGBTQ.
Yeah, and then they accepted it at the time when they started putting the mediocre crap out, which obviously, you know, is just typical of Disney. It's just missed the boat, isn't it?
Yep. So, I mean, it makes you wonder about what would have happened if Blue Sky would have stuck around to finish this movie.
Yeah, well, I don't even think they would have allowed it to exist. I don't think. It'd probably be in a basement somewhere.
If you remember, they were about 75% complete when this movie was cancelled.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of projects that Disney have like let go to like the last minute and then decide not to do.
I guess that's true. Yeah. You're right. I mean, looking at you, Gigantic.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, we've got it. So here it is. So let's not dwell on.
I mean,
that
since this is Journey to the Blue Sky, I mean, I'm just genuinely curious about what would have happened if Blue Sky would have released this as their final movie as opposed to Spies in Disguise.
It would basically leave a lot of questions for Disney about why they, you know, shut down the studio in the first place.
I agree. Yeah. This would have been their best movie that they've ever made. And now here's
Here's the thing about this, though. The one thing I would say about that is that I don't think Nimona, I think under Blue Sky, at least with Disney under there as well, would have been as rebellious. I guarantee you, I think even though it was 75% complete, I'll basically go on that. I get a feeling that, you know, once they went over to Netflix, I guarantee you they just said, oh yeah, just let it fly. Like, you know, if you want to make fun of Disney, if you want to make fun of the, you know, the current order of things, then just go for it. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you Netflix probably said, yeah, just do that, just make sure you don't do anything too crazy.
That's true, because, you know, in between production there were changes on writers and directors, so maybe you're right. Maybe after Blue Sky had no longer had the opportunity to finish this movie, and then Anna Purina Pictures got a hold of it, maybe they were able to add in a lot of things that they weren't allowed to add in when they were doing it with Blue Sky.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we're halfway through the movie still. So so we understand now that the director is, by the way, the reason we understand that the director is the villain is through the squire. So like, I mean, the chase scene through the squire, I think it was pretty interesting. Like,
yeah,
you know,
it was
pretty interesting.
Yeah. About
that, you know, Ballister wants to go in quietly, but Nimona basically just wants to wreck house. The whole character dynamic, I think, is brilliant.
Yes, I mean, you have Ballister who wants to be able to keep it civil, even though he's already deemed as a villain towards everybody. And then Nimona's like, you know what? Screw this. I mean, I'm already seen as a villain. Let's just wreak havoc. Let's see some blood.
Can you imagine if Sam Fisher from Splinter Cell got Nimona as a psychic? That's gonna be the next. I hope that's gonna be the next meme. Like, you know, what if Nimona was involved in this? Like, you know, something really subtle, and then all of a sudden, like, she just came in and just started wrecking house.
Smell a fanfic.
Oh boy, I'm actually gonna check out the Nimona fanfiction and see where all the fans are at.
All right, let you do that.
Yeah, but anyway, I suppose I got this movie to do. So, I like the whole thing. By the way, they do. I think at one point they kind of made fun of slowdown moments at one point, because obviously they got the squire and kidnapped him in a car and then brought him to like a seedy side of town to, like, you know, question him about what's going on. And Ballister realizes that, you know, Nimona's hurt because of his actions, because he's got, you know, by the way, I kind of thinking that was a you know, a reference to, like, there's an arrow in your butt.
Yes, I definitely do agree. In that scene in Shrek, in
but
which...
by the way, before I say that, it's not played romantically. It's played as friends.
Oh god, if it would have been played romantically, that would have been really awkward.
Yeah, exactly.
But no. It's supposed to be a joke where, you know, essentially, like, Nimona doesn't feel any pain when Ballister pulls the arrow, and it's not from her butt; it's from her leg. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she feels absolutely no pain. She's like, I've been through worse, which means that, okay, what have you been going through? Which, again, it really brings the interest in Mnemonis. Like, okay, if you've been through worse than getting an arrow stuck in your leg, I want to know more about you, which, again, it makes you want to know about the character more, which is great.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing about this, though, is that, you know, Nimona, as you probably imagine, she is a even though she's like this really amazing character, let's keep this in mind, she's a damaged soul. You know, it's like, you know, she's been through a lot in, like, in the entire time that she's had an existence in this world. You know,
yeah, and I guess kind of similar to both Shrek and Fiona, in which, like, you know, Shrek was always ostracized by people because they thought of him as a scary ogre, and then Fiona because, you know, she spent almost half of her life in the tower where they were trying to break away from the spell that the evil witch cast on her. So yeah, there's damage on both of those characters as much as there's damage on Nimona, where we do get to find out on why that she feels the way that she does.
Mm-hmm. So they have these slow moments, but then after that, like, you know, you get to hear the squire saying, like, you know, oh, it's nice to have you've had this slow moment. I'm still locked in the trunk. So I say, oh yeah, let's get back to the plot. I thought that was pretty hilarious.
that was pretty funny because there's like a lot of movies that do that.
So Squire basically spills the beans and says that, he was playing around with Ballister's armor, but he started hiding in the locker, he saw the director basically replace the sword in his locker. So that's basically then we get the whole thing of, like, you know, the director basically being the nemesis of this movie just through that one thing, which I thought that was really good building all that up, I thought.
I do agree. And you would think that the director would have nothing to do with this because we saw that the director was just as... you know, passionate as the queen of knighting Ballister into their lineup. But then, no, the director wanted absolutely nothing to do with Ballister. She didn't trust him at all. And she said that the queen was letting down her guard because, you know, commoners shouldn't be knights. You know, he's not a descendant over towards, you know, Glorith. Why should we let him in? But yeah, she decided to justify herself by switching the sword to make it look like Ballister killed the queen, when in reality she did.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because she wanted to take over the kingdom. That would have been the easiest thing to do. She wanted to do it so that she can be able to prove that Ballister was bad and that he should have never been knighted in the first place.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, like, you know, after the queen had died, like, you know, who was going to be the next in line?
Well,
so, like, I thought that's what we were going to be going towards.
But we never got to that. And I think that's actually really interesting. It's like, that could have been so easy to do. It's like, the queen is dead, now I rule. But no, that never happens because that's not her motivation.
Yeah, like, it would have been interesting to see, like, you know, who would have taken over effectively, like, after the... Because, I mean, if anything, like, you know, maybe... because he was the next in. I mean, like, he was, like, you know,
he's a descendant of Glorith, so maybe he could have been next in line.
Maybe he probably would have been king. I don't know. Well, it's like, I mean, that I always admit that bit should have been probably more explored, I would have thought, because, like, you know, how can you just have, like, a dead queen and, like, not, because usually, like, queens when they die usually are replaced by the, you know, for example, like, you know, when Queen Elizabeth died here in the UK, like, you know, we ended with King Charles. So,
right,
like,
right.
Yeah, that's usually what happens, but I mean, I digress. We end up with the squire saying that the director basically did all of this, and so they did something really clever to get the confession out of her, and that is that supposedly Ambrosius breaks in into her office and says, you know, I demand answers about what's happened, and then, you know, where the director takes Ballister's sword and then stabs Atrocious, quote unquote, and then he falls to the ground and dies, not realizing that she hasn't actually stabbed Ambrosius, he's actually stabbed Nimona, disguised as Ambrosius.
Yeah, that was actually pretty funny.
That was actually pretty good. It kind of reminded me, like, you know, when Judy Hobson's Zootopia, like, you know, somewhat like you had had
yeah, she basically recorded that's you know, basically recorded the lines, you know, very similar to how Nick was able to use the recording to kind of
Nick, and
basically
so then
take advantage
and
of
Nick was
her.
basically faking, like, you know, the fact that he's like taking the berries, and in actual fact he hadn't.
Yeah,
So
exactly. So yeah, it's very similar to that. And there's also another scene in Monsters, Inc. in which, like, you know, we have, you know, basically Sully, who's being cornered by Water News, and he makes a confession of, like, I'll kidnap 1,000 children before I let this company die. And then they were actually in the training room, and Mike recorded the whole thing with a whole bunch of the CDA around him. So yeah, it's very similar to that in a way.
Yeah, so they run away to go put that on the internet, spread it around the whole place, and all chaos ensues, and now the whole place is in absolute turmoil because everyone's protesting the fact that the director had all lied to them.
Yeah.
So, that was, mind you, like, on top of that, like, you got to see, like, all the struggle, because, like, you got people protesting that they, you know, they saw all of this, and all of a sudden, like, you know, the authority was putting them all down. So, like, you know, you got to see, like, all of that going on. And, but then, obviously, funny enough, though, that's not the end of it. Like,
no.
Ambrosius seeks out Ballister. Like, you know, he says, oh, can we have some nachos at the place? And that's a code for, like, you know, then they have to secretly meet. So that's what they do. And, but then the TV comes on in the bar, and they see that the director then says, oh, no, that wasn't me. That was Nimona pretending to be me. And because they'd got footage of Nimona, obviously, you know, in doing her actions of, like, you know, transforming into, like, different creatures. And then she said, oh, no, well, that was just Nimona pretending to be me. And everyone, unfortunately, buys it.
Yeah, and even Ambrosius buys it, because there's an ancient scroll from like 1,000 years ago about the shape-shifting monster, the same one that, you know, Glorith took down so that they can be able to protect the kingdom. So they think that maybe she's the monster, and that she was the one who manipulated Ballister into saying, okay, she's going to get her revenge on the kingdom for taking, you know, her down over 1,000 years ago. And Ambrosius believes that Ballister is being manipulated by Nimona. And again, this is brilliant, because you would think that the whole director is the bad guy would be like the climax, would be the end of the movie, and then everything will be back to normal. But no, they cleverly decided to include the footage that we saw earlier in the train set and throughout town of Nimona transforming into different animals, and to say, no, she is the bad guy. She's the one who actually, you know, was the, you know, the one who confessed all of this stuff to lie to you. So again, putting in false information on the news so that people can believe the liar again. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. And, you know, once we go through that, so then Ballister confronts Nimona about the fact that, you know, is this you in there, in this scroll? And so then we get the one thing I will say about this is that once again, we get the whole, like, you know, oh, the heroes all fall out with themselves. They all, like, go their separate ways for a little while. And then, you know, but eventually they're going to make it out in the end. But no, funny enough, you know, Nimona starts, like, freaking out and then turns into, like, you know, this huge monster that starts destroying the city.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of 22, in which she gave in to her emotions, and then she started to just basically wander around thinking that she was useless in Soul.
But, you know,
or if you want to say another example, it's like Steven Universe, in which, like, you know, in Steven Universe, you know, future, where Steven was so caught up with all of his emotions that he just couldn't control himself anymore. And he turned into this giant monster that was about to wreck everything. And then the gems came along and told him that it was okay for him to cry because of everything that he was going through with his trauma. So, yeah, it's very similar to those kind of things.
Yeah, exactly. So, Nimona looks at the Glorif statue, and she decides that she's going to basically kill herself, which, you know, is, you know, quite dark with the direction to go in, really, with this.
I mean, we did get that foreshadowing earlier, in which she was telling Ballister that, you know, what's, you know, the sad thing is that sometimes when people, you know, call you a monster, and, you know, it hurts as much as, you know, people stabbing you, and you feel like you want to do it yourself. So she, and especially since Glorith, if we look back on her tragic backstory, that, you know, 1,000 years ago, Glorith was the only friend that she was able to connect with that didn't see her as a monster. And then basically, like, history was kind of like rewritten wrong, because First of all, the fire was inadvertently caused by the people, and they were blaming the monster for doing it. And Glorith was just a young child. She wasn't an adult doing this. Yeah, I mean, even
there's
though that...
one thing about this though that kind of like, I mean, again, this isn't fair to Nimona. I'm not gonna like it, but it kind of reminds me of something. Do you remember like what was the one of the worst episodes of Avatar: The Last Airbender was?
Oh yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
the Great Divide.
Yeah, the Great Divide, and he had to take the two bloody tribes through the whole thing, and then he basically made up a story about like, you know, oh, it was just two kids like, you know, playing a game called Redemption. Yeah, it's just, it sort of kind of reminds me of that really, but obviously in this case it's true.
Yes, it's actually true.
So,
Anyway, but yeah, that moment where she was almost about to kill herself from the blade of her former best friend was actually pretty heartbreaking.
It was, wasn't it? But Balazar stops her from doing it and says that, you know, she is Nimona, and that, you know, she doesn't have to do this, and that he'll look, you know, he cares about her and, you know, doesn't want her to go. And so that stops her from doing that. But then, obviously, the director, you know, doesn't accept that, and basically gets like this giant gun that's going to blow up the city. So Nimona, we supposedly think, sacrifices herself against the gun and blows that thing to pieces. And
yeah.
Then, did the director die in that moment? I actually can't remember if
I mean,
she did.
I think that she did, because obviously the whole canon just crumbled and fell apart. So, and especially since she was inside of it. So, and there's no way she could have survived.
Yeah. So,
yeah, didn't it give you like Iron Giant vibes, in which, like, you know, the missile is about to crash down in Maine, and then the Iron Giant tells Hogarth to stay and that he'll go and no following, and he flies up, sacrifices his life, blows up, and then he dies?
Yeah, just lack of Bruce Willis. But
well, no, not Bruce Willis, Vin Diesel.
Oh, Vin Diesel, sorry.
Bruce Willis was in the Rugrats Go Wild movie.
Oh, yeah. Less to say about that, Bethesda. Anyway, so, Nimona sacrifices herself. And you see like all these, you know, all these like bits, you think of like, you know, all these like, you know, glittering bits that like come fluttering down, and you think they're all parts of Nimona, and you think, oh wow, she's gone, she's actually gone. And then, you know, basically the whole city's in mourning for her, effectively,
yeah,
in the next one. And then, you know, there's like the whole memorials and things like that for her. And now, you know, the city's actually, for once, actually free. Like, you know, they visit, like, you know, they venture outside of the city, you know, and it looks like they've actually like made connections, like, you know, outside of where they are as well, which is going to be interesting if they decide to do a sequel, because I think that's probably where they're going to end up next. I probably imagine, like, outside of the city.
Yeah, so. I think that there is more to the story of Nimona. I think that the graphic novel reaches a lot of story bits that we haven't seen in the movie. So I would love to see a sequel if they're able to do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And as I say, that's, you know, Ballister and, you know, Ambrosius, I think, make a very, very cute couple. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I know that, you know, we do see them, like, you know, constantly together and butting each other's heads, but I don't know if they're going to, like, further the relationship if they ever do a sequel, but if they do, I would love it. I would love to see that happen.
Yeah, I think so too. And but then we get the bit at the end where I'm like, I don't know how to feel about the end, really. Like, you know, he goes back to like his old hideouts and puts the things back together again, and then he turns around and then finds that, you know, he then goes, holy sh, and then that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And then we are under the assumption that maybe Nimona might still be alive.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It kind of reminds me of like when Mike finally signs, you know, Boo, like, you know,
oh, Sully.
Yeah, Sully, yeah. So,
or it kind of reminds me of like the last episode of Cyber Six, in which you think that, you know, Cyber Six, when she sacrificed her life so that she can be able to, you know, protect Meridiana from being blown up, and, you know, we see it blow up and there's no way she could have escaped, and then we see the light of her apartment, it's like, oh, maybe she did survive. Well, we never got to know about that because the show was canceled.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, they definitely have set it up for a sequel, so I mean, like, if Netflix green lights it, I think, you know, and also I wouldn't be opposed to it, would you?
Me neither. I would
love
that.
This movie, yeah. I think Nimona 2, I think, will probably be one of the better sequels. I
agree, yeah.
They got a lot of potential, they built up a lot of potential into what they could do here, so yeah, I'd be interested to see that.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So, yeah, I mean, here's the thing about this. Like, we could go on forever talking about Nimona about this. Like, I think it has a lot of, like, it is hilarious. It is, you know, we're really serious at times. It, like, has a really great, you know, physical aesthetic. I mean, the characters are all great in all of this. And, you know, the music also is great, great in this, too. There's actually a soundtrack you can get off, you know, Apple and Spotify as well. So, like, you know, I definitely, you know, say everybody check that out because it's brilliant. And so, they have done a phenomenal job with this. And so, I think all we got to do right now is rate it, I guess.
All right, let's do it.
10.
Wow, that was easy.
I mean, what else can I say? They've done everything 100% right in this movie. 10.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm going to say the same thing. 10.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it is Blue Sky's effectively like, you know, legacy at this point. And I mean, it's their pretty much their movie on their deathbed, effectively, that was then picked up by, you know, another studio, which then, you know, cranked up the volume and did everything they did with this. And, you know, I think now, I mean, by the way, I want to actually shout out to all the fans of Nimona, because they are the ones right now that are keeping this thing, you know, super relevant at this point. Like, I've seen, like, have you seen, like, some, like, you know, the street art that they've also been doing?
No.
And, like, you know, some, yeah, there's a whole, like, you know, oh, I forgot what they call them, you know, there's a whole thing that they did on a wall, and, like, it's just Nimona, look, you know, basically saying metal on it, and it looks like, you know,
oh, you're talking about the street artists.
Yeah, like, you know, there's been a lot of that. So yeah, so tell you what, actually, I'll send you it now, that I've seen.
Okay.
And it looks fantastic. And but, you know, the fans are doing the fan art. The fans are, you know, are seeing, like, all the stuff, mentioning all the stuff they love about this movie, the fact how relatable it all is and everything. Like, you know, where they are really, really into this. And I really hope that, you know, this keeps up to, you know, so much that, you know, maybe there will be a sequel to all of this, or maybe there might be a TV series. Who knows? Like, I think they got something really. I think Netflix has got something really good here, and I don't think they should squander it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I'm just looking at it right now. It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's a mural. Sorry, that's what it's called.
Oh, so, mural. Okay. Mural, then. Yeah. But yeah, shout out to whoever did this. It looks great.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? And I think Nimona is going to be the next phenomenon if they play this correctly. So yeah, I
mean,
hope it definitely does.
Yeah, I mean, other than the Super Mario Brothers movie and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Nimona is like the only movie that I see people actually talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, like, it could be a contender for an Oscar.
Yeah, I think so too.
And if this movie wins the Oscar for Best Animated Feature, that would be a major slap in the face for Disney for multiple reasons. The fact that they canceled this movie, the fact that they let it go astray, the fact that they could have had this as a feature for Blue Sky for the final time, and then they just didn't do anything about it because they didn't want to include the stuff that people are actually praising this movie about, and the fact that they weren't able to release anything that people are actually caring about. Like,
yeah.
They, I mean, imagine that, Netflix winning two times in a row for Best Animated Feature. Disney would be like shaking in their boots.
Well, it's got Spider-Verse to contend with, and we
the
all
Super
know
Mario Brothers movie.
I mean, well, I don't know. Like, here's the thing about this. Like, of all the people that I've been talked about right now, I got to be honest with you. I think I wouldn't be too surprised if Spider-Verse walk away with it. I really don't.
You know what? You do have a point. I mean, I would just say that those three in particular.
The Mario movie did what it was supposed to do, but that's not saying much. It just needed to be the Mario movie. I mean, I wouldn't say that's like Oscar worthy, in my opinion. Like, that's to me like you're making up for the fact that you failed on the first attempt. Eventually, mm-hmm. Now you made the second attempt, and that's a makeup. I wanted to say that makes it a good movie. Spider-Verse is a good movie. I've got to be honest with everyone. Just because I've not seen it yet, but I've heard hearing things about it, and you know, it does make me want to go see it at some point. But yeah, I think right now, I think Spider-Verse probably is the favorite. I might be wrong, but I feel like it is.
I'll just say it's a tie between Spider-Verse and Nimona.
We'll see. But anyway, that's taking it away from Nimona. Nimona is a fantastic movie. And I urge anyone with a Netflix account to go check it out. In fact, you know, when my Disney Plus account runs out in the year, I think I'll probably get him a Netflix account and probably just check it out just for the hell of it.
All right, then.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are back, everybody, for Journey to the Blue Sky, and we're going to be continuing off with the movies that we left off of. So last time we talked about Rio. This time around, we're going to be going over to our next movie, which is Ice Age Continental Drift.
Until then, bye-bye for now.
See everyone.